And welcome into this Friday edition of the Brad Sesmat Show. My name is Jared Cohen, and today joining me on the show, Greg Esposito. It's the J. Cohen Espo Show here on Sports360AZ.com. Greg, it's a pleasure as always to sit next to you and embark on a day of sports where there is literally nothing going on.
Oh, there really isn't. This reminds me of July, the last time I was sitting here, and there really is just nothing to talk about.
And we can just drop the mic and leave. You know, thanks for showing up. We're done. Glad you tuned in, and we're done. So see you later.
I understand why Brad just decides to take a day like this off. I mean, there's really nothing to talk about. It'd be a very difficult show to do, so he makes us do it.
He leaves us to the wolves. That's exactly how he's doing it. But we'll try to get you through the next 2 hours. 10 to noon here on Sports360AZ.com. In all seriousness, there is a ton going on in the sports world and in the Arizona sports world, not just the entire globe, if you will, and we're going to get through all that. We're going to talk to Jimmy Vaccaro, the wisest of the wise guys here on the show, going to talk about why the Cardinals are 9-point underdogs against the Seahawks, even though they're 11-3 and have won 14 of their last 15 home games. And you have an opinion on that as well. I look forward to hearing that.
I have an opinion on everything today. Don't you worry about it.
He's going to bring it and then some on the show today. And we're also going to be joined by Bill Gutekunst. Really looking forward to talking with him on his weekly segment with us. All the stuff going on around the movie The Interview, which is supposed to come out next week on Christmas, on how that was taken out of the theaters and has no plans of being put to DVD, all around the FBI investigation of this North Korean hacking scheme that's going on. I'm really looking forward to hearing his thoughts on that because it's an industry near and dear to his heart. In the meantime, let's get into the top stories of this hour, which are brought to you by the Honda Resort and Casino, located in the beautiful White Mountains just outside of Pine Top in eastern Arizona. Head on up now, enjoy ski season, and make sure you stay at the Honda Resort and Casino. And as mentioned, there is a lot going on, Espo. And first and foremost, the Cardinals have a pretty big football game. And breaking news, already this was one of the biggest games in the history of games. They're adding lasers to this game. There's going to be players with freaking laser beams attached to their heads.
I'm very excited for this because when you throw lasers into this, all bets are off. Now there's lasers.
You don't have
a quarterback with a laser beam for an arm. You got a noodle arm, but we got lasers.
We've got lasers.
Exciting.
Michael Bidwell announces that at halftime of the Sunday Night Football game this Sunday, there will be a laser show. So in case you weren't already excited about the ramifications of this football game, a laser show at the University of Phoenix Stadium, you better be there or be square.
I really hope it's like 12 guys with laser pointers just standing out on the field. Nothing too. We overhype everything, so it'd be really great if it were just 12 guys, laser pointers, and just pointing around.
A whole different level of halftime shows at the NFL level. That's what we have on the docket. Let's listen to, though. Peter King joined Brad on Tuesday. He does so every week, talking about this huge matchup between the Seahawks and the Cardinals. And as mentioned, the Cardinals are underdogs in this game, and the doubters are out in full swing.
They really believe in Bruce Arians, and they really believe in the messages that he is going to give them. And to me, I think you can't underestimate how he leads them and the kind of stuff that he says to them. There's no question that he's going to bring this up this week.
That's Peter King, joined by him every Tuesday, only on Sports 360 AZ, talks Cardinals every week. And that's the biggest thing. You know, this is a Cardinals team that's been decimated by injuries all season long, yet they're still in the thick of it and have a chance to not only win the NFC West, but can lock up home field advantage with a win in this game.
The nobody believes in us storyline only takes a team so far. I'm sorry.
You're right.
You can only get so motivated by nobody believes in us. And at some point, you have to go out there and prove it. Now, they've played well all year. There's no doubt in that. But the odds are stacked against them, not just this week, but into the playoffs as well. You don't have your starting quarterback. You don't have your second-string quarterback. You have a guy that was basically on the scrap heap until the middle of this season. You bring him back from, I believe, San Diego's practice squad. And Ryan Lindley was a guy that Ken Whisenhunt pulled a Titanic and decided he was going to let go and just drown like Jack. He wasn't going to worry about Ryan Lindley anymore. He was just going to let things kind of end here. When he can't fit as a Ken Whisenhunt quarterback, a guy that was looking for anything to work, now you've got all your hopes stacked on Ryan Lindley to take you to the promised land, to make you the number one seed in the NFC, to get you home field advantage and possibly win playoff games. I'm sorry, it's not. That's where it begins and ends, right there. There's a reason the national media does not believe in the Cardinals right now, and it's not a disrespect thing. It's the fact that you're, in essence, using a fourth-string quarterback in this game and potentially in the playoffs. That's why they don't believe in it, and they take emotion out of it. They don't care how the ratings are for any, you know, in the context of Arizona. They don't care whether the Cardinals win or lose. There's no emotional connection. They're looking at it objectively. It's not that they don't believe in the Cardinals. They would believe in them if Carson Palmer were starting. But at some point, you have to look at the cold, hard facts that Ryan Lindley is not good enough to win you a game of this magnitude and a playoff game, or multiple playoff games, depending on how Stanton is. That's the crux of the matter, and they're not going to be able to overcome that by just simply thinking they don't believe in us.
No question. I completely agree with you. I completely agree. And, well, there are factors for this game ahead. The offensive line of the Seattle Seahawks is decimated with injuries. It actually has just come out just a few minutes ago. Pete Carroll on his weekly radio show up in Seattle said that Okung and Unger were both not play in this game. The Cardinals had 7 sacks, and Eric told me before the show that Bruce Arians said that they could have had 11 the last time that the two teams met up in Seattle. So that's a big factor.
And they still lost with that many sacks.
They did still lose because the offense just could not do anything with Drew Stanton, to your point, who was the second string quarterback in that game. Switching gears, though, familiar face here in the Valley, Justin Upton is on the move again. He has been traded, according to reports, to the San Diego Padres just a day after the Padres completed their Matt Kemp trade and made that official. But Justin Upton heading to Seattle for a group of prospects. One of the prospects they get in return is a former Gilbert High School standout, Dustin Peterson. But the debate's still out there. Did the Diamondbacks or the Braves win the Prado-Upton trade that really blew people's socks off? The question is, well, it depends on what the prospects do in the end, because it has nothing to do with the main pieces that were involved.
Everybody's a loser. You're a loser. You're a loser. San Diego, you're a loser. When you look at this, Justin Upton, there's something wrong here. If this guy was supposed to be the next Ken Griffey Jr., was supposed to be a big-time bat, a superstar, a guy that could save a franchise, if you will, and now he's been on 3 teams in 3 years. He had a career year last year in Atlanta, and they still jettisoned him for less than they got in the Hayward deal. There's obviously something more to Justin Upton than just the guy that can get you 100 RBI and hit 30 home runs. There's more to this. And the biggest question for me is, does he have to pack the Uptown sign with him each way? Was that a parting gift the Diamondbacks gave him?
It might have been. It might have been. The interesting thing is the Braves are still stuck with BJ Upton, though. And that's a guy that hasn't had a career year, and that's a guy that costs a lot of money, and they can't even give him away. They probably should have just handed him to the Padres, said, here's a parting gift. We'll give you the Uptown sign and BJ Upton in the Justin Upton trade. But it seems like this new Braves regime just wants to do without the strikeouts. You know, this is one of the teams that struck out the most in Major League Baseball last season. Justin Upton strikes out a lot. Jason Hayward strikes out a lot. Both of them just gone. Both two of the most prized outfielding prospects, 5 years ago, mm-hmm. 4, 5, 6 years ago in the minor leagues. I mean, Eric pointed out that Upton was supposed to be called the next Ken Griffey.
Yeah.
It's crazy to see if when these guys don't pan out, how they just, that the wheels just fly off.
Well, and we know all about the strikeout issue here in Phoenix. That was part of the reason why he was traded to the Braves in the first place. It wasn't a well-kept secret that Justin Upton struck out a lot when the Braves acquired him. I still think there's more. What I really want to know, and wake me up when this happens, because this will be the biggest acquisition, is whoever gets Cade Upton from Justin Verlander, that's when we're talking. That's the Upton deal I want to know about, because Justin doesn't move the needle for me.
And so before we switch gears, Buster only had this to say about the Padres outfield overhaul over the last couple days.
the Padres are following through on a vision that they identified early in this offseason after they hired A.J. Preller to be their general manager. When you talked with executives with other teams, they were telling you in late November, boy, the Padres are looking to make big moves, and they feel like that by adding a couple of exactly the right power-hitting bats that they could contend in the National League West in 2015 because of the makeup of the rest of the team.
And I think he's right to a point because their starting pitching is very good.
Well, but what do power bats do in a cavernous ballpark like that? You're going to have to hope they rake on the road because they're not going to do it at home.
It's a great point. A lot of deep flyouts. And yeah. Both guys, actually, their home runs were down last season, even though from an RBI standpoint, Upton had a career season from that capacity. Another trade that happened, but in a different sport, NBA, big trade yesterday. Rajon Rondo traded from the Celtics to the Dallas Mavericks for Brendan Wright, Jay Crowder, and a couple draft picks, basically. Great deal for the Mavericks, who now have a starting lineup of Rondo, Monte Ellis, Chandler Parsons, Dirk Nowitzki, and Tyson Chandler. That's one of the best starting fives in the NBA this season, and that includes what the Cavs throw out, the Bulls throw out, the Thunder, and the Spurs.
It's all right. I'm gonna be honest. They have no backup big man now. They're supposedly chasing Jermaine O'Neal, which when part of your season hinges on trying to woo Jermaine O'Neal back to the NBA, that's a little troublesome. And if you look at Rajon Rondo, defenses can cheat off him. He can't hit a shot to save his life. He shoots 50% around the basket.
But in this offense, you don't need to be a shooter if you're Rajon Rondo, because their offense, even without Rajon Rondo, their offense has been predicated on screen and roll. You have Parsons and Nowitzki spreading the offense. Like, basically, the point guard comes off the screen, and you have four different options. You have the cutter off the screen. You have a guy on one baseline. You have a guy in another, and then you have Dirk roaming in the middle of the court for a mid-range or three-pointer. It's probably one of the hardest offenses to defend, and that was before Rondo got to the team. And now Rondo, who can make passes without looking anywhere, he slings it wherever he feels the ball should go, and they land in players' hands. There's going to be a lot of high-percentage baskets on this Mavericks team.
But you can cheat on that pick-and-roll now off of Rondo, because he's not going to hit a long jumper. He's not going to hit a three-pointer on you, so you can cheat off that. You can double a Dirk. You can double the hot hand. And I think this is a good trade for Dallas, because they basically have to go all in. Dirk's almost done. So you go all in. You're not playing for the future when Tyson Chandler and Dirk Nowitzki are two of your bigger pieces. So you roll the dice. You take a waiver on Rajon Rondo. You hope it works out, and you can re-sign him in the offseason. There's still flaws to this team, though, and they're still playing in the stacked West. So I don't think this changes the picture in the West all that much. Maybe one or two seeding spots for Dallas, but I don't think it changes the bigger picture.
What it does, though, is it just makes the West and the amazing point guards in the West that much stronger and takes another one out of the East. Kyrie Irving and, John Wall are, the only ones left in the Eastern
Conference.
Don't
forget Kyle Lowry.
And Kyle Lowry. I love Kyle Lowry. How dare I? So, anyways, coming up next, though, we started talking about the Cardinals-Seahawks matchup. Yes, there will be laser beams, but there will also be football on the field, and we're going to get into that next. Jared Cohen and Greg Esposito filling in for Brad today on a Friday edition of the Brad Sesmatch Show on Sports 360 AZ and AZ Central Sports.
For in-depth, unique coverage from the high schools to the pros, follow us on Twitter at Sports 360 AZ.
Sports360, AZ.com, AZ Central Sports. It's the Brad Sesmatch Show. I'm Jared Cohen. That's Greg Esposito filling in for Brad today. And the Cardinals have big things coming up this weekend. They have a division championship on the line. They have potential home field advantage throughout the playoffs, leading to a home Super Bowl on the line. And they have lasers. Freaking laser beams attached.
And that is to have sharks with freaking laser beams.
Are there sharks too?
Sharks.
I'm in if there's
layers.
Sharks.
Sharks and Mr. Bigglesworth.
Maybe they can get Willie Beeman, who played for the Miami Sharks in Any Given Sunday, to play quarterback too.
Now
we've solved everything.
Where's Willie Beeman?
Jamie Foxx can save this. That's what I'm saying.
He was pretty darn good.
Sharks with freaking lasers and Willie Beeman. That's how Sunday can get more exciting on NBC.
That's how the spread will go down from 9, which is where it is as we sit here today. Overall, Espo, I'm curious. I know you're thinking big picture on this game, and we'll get into that in a moment. But first, just thinking more locally and not as globally. This is a big game, and it's a big matchup when you're looking at Ryan Lindley at quarterback, but also a Cardinals defense, which has been spectacular. The key in this game, in your opinion, hinges on who or what, in your opinion?
The special teams and Canton's arrow in particular, because this may be a game that basically comes down to dueling field goals. And do you trust the rookie in probably the most pressure-packed situation he's faced to come through for you? Will he be able to do that? Can he pull that off? And on the other side, can you potentially block a field goal, something you've been known for? Those are the kind of little things that are going to play a big part. Ted Ginn, can he help control field position when the Seahawks have to punt? Because inevitably, there's going to be a lot of punts in this game, too, because you got two very good defenses going against each other, two offensives that have struggled at times. It's really going to come down to those special teams.
I'm with you, and this is an opportunity for Ted Ginn to have his moment. You know, if he can return one for a score in this game, it would be enormous. It would take so much off the backs of the offense, and it would give them some cushion. I mean, a lot can happen. Maybe they're down 20 points when he returns one. It won't matter. But if they can get something out of him in the return game, maybe a touchdown, if not good field position, you're right. It really changes things. That's an aspect that, to be honest, I really didn't think much of beforehand, but I think that could be one of the biggest factors.
I just think it's very dangerous when you continue to put that much pressure on your defense to have to be the ones to carry you week in and week out and do some of the scoring even for your team. And then you also put that added pressure on Butler, who's a rookie, and Canton's arrow. It could be a very dangerous recipe there when you're playing a team in the Seahawks that know how to win in big game situations. They're the defending champs for a reason. They can figure that out.
And one of the main reasons why they have won in big game situations, and I think before you mentioned the special teams, which I completely agree with, maybe the 1A to special teams is containing Marshawn Lynch. Because the only way that this game gets out of hand for the Cardinals on the scoreboard is if the defense can't contain him, because he can take over a game by himself. Russell Wilson, the Cardinals have gone out and proven that Russell Wilson will not beat them on his own. He has beaten a lot of teams on his own over the course of his young career, but the Cardinals kind of have his number. Not to the point where they've dominated him, because he looked very good in the last game, but to the point where his plays and his decision-making hasn't been game-altering. But when Marshawn Lynch is running the ball effectively, getting 4 to 5 yards per carry, and the Seahawks are able to have those long, methodical drives wearing down the Cardinals defense, which is already going to be on the field a lot because we know the offense isn't going to be able to do a ton against the Seahawks defense. If they can contain Lynch, it's almost like beating the Seahawks at their own game by keeping their offense off the field and keeping their defense active and ready on the field. And Lynch has the ability to be the ebb and flow of that dynamic.
Well, you've also got to contain Russell Wilson from a running perspective.
Absolutely.
Because that can change the entire game plan if he can get out of the pocket and find a way to pick up those yards if Marshawn Lynch isn't necessarily picking him up. But I think the ground game for Seattle is really key. But overall, you're relying a lot on that defense. You're relying on a running back that was just on the practice squad not long ago. There's a lot of too many ifs or too many question marks to really feel confident going into this.
And Jake Plummer, former Cardinal great, talked about one of the big question marks, Ryan Lindley, who's set to be the starting quarterback for the Cardinals, yesterday on the show.
God, just go out and play ball and don't worry about it. You know, you're in the league for a reason, and trust in the guys around you. Anticipate them getting open. Don't wait to see them open, but see the defense and see where they're at, and know that if Larry Fitzgerald's running a read route, he's going to get open. So don't wait. Trust your instincts and throw it where you think you're going to go, and have fun. God dang, what an awesome experience and an opportunity for this young man to go out and play well and lead this team, a really tough-nosed team that believes in each other.
Love Jake. I completely agree.
I love Jake. I have his jersey at home, not afraid to admit that from my younger days. But I just don't agree with that. We saw what that kind of mentality could cause when Johnny Manziel went out there and did what Jake was talking about last week. And it, I think Lindley has to understand the scope of this game, understand what he's capable of and what he's not capable of, and play within himself. Because if he tries to go out there and be Carson Palmer and tries to sling it, as Bruce Arians likes to say, you could be in a very precarious position, because Ryan Lindley has the most passes in NFL history without a touchdown pass to start a career. Like, there's a reason he hasn't seen much success. He has to play within himself. He can't go out there and just try to use his instincts and try to think he can make every throw out there. He's got to know what he's capable of and realize the magnitude of the situation he's in.
Yeah, no question about it. Now let's get more big picture, more global here. Is this, we already talked about the fact that this is a game that has the home field advantage on the line, the division championship on the line, the Super Bowl is already in town. A lot of things hinge on whether the Cardinals can win this game or not. It can hinge from the Cardinals being at home or having to play in New Orleans the first round of the playoffs, which, even though they're down this season, that's never an easy task. And if they can get through that, they play either at Green Bay or at Seattle, which we know how that's fared for teams this season. The whole debate of, is this truly the biggest regular season game in the history of the franchise? I put that in your court right now.
No, the answer is simple. No, it's not. This is a game where, okay, if they win, they lock up the number one seed, they lock up the division. If they lose, they could still accomplish that in the final week of the season. There's still a chance for both of those things. The biggest regular season game in Cardinals history, and for those of you that hopped on the bandwagon when a man named Kurt Warner joined the team and there was some winning, you don't remember this. But back in 1997, those of us who still have the burn marks on our backsides from the metal bleachers at Sun Devil Stadium,
It runs very deep.
It was a game against San Diego with a chance to go to the playoffs for the first time in Arizona as an NFL team. That was the biggest game ever. And it came down to a Chris Jackie field goal. Chris Jackie, who was the second kicker to be on the roster after, I believe,
Bill Gramatica?
I want to say it was Butler. It may have actually been, I don't remember exactly who it was, but
that wasn't the Bill Gramatica
celebration.
No,
it wasn't Bill
ACL
Gramatica. Year. Bill Gramatica came later.
Okay.
Work on your Cardinals history here.
Okay.
I'm taking you to school, all of you. Okay? 97, it comes down to that, and they hit that field goal, and they make the playoff. All the ghosts of the past were gone. You didn't have to worry about Buddy Ball anymore, or Joe Bugle, or all the 7-9 years that you fell short, or the 4-12 years that were pathetic. It was the first time you had a winner in town outside of Jerry Maguire's.
You got a winner
game,
in town.
All right? That was the biggest regular season game in Cardinals history, because a lot of things could have gone differently. You don't win that, you don't make the playoffs, you don't beat the Cowboys in the playoffs. You could wind up having a team that moves, because football wasn't a solid thing here in the Valley. You were getting 25,000 people at Sun Devil Stadium for a time. And nobody's going to rush the field and tear down the goalposts if the Cardinals beat the Seahawks on Sunday. They did that at Sun Devil Stadium, and they carried those things down Mill Avenue. That is the biggest regular season game in Cardinals history, and this one isn't. Because really, if you're looking at it objectively, which most people in this town aren't, they have Big Red Fever right now.
No, I would have never guessed that.
They're not thinking.
That's right, Espo. You were the guy that was out at the grocery store this morning at 4 a.m. to get your free Arizona Cardinal hat.
That was me.
Where's the hat?
And as you can tell, I'm decked in my Cardinals gear, and we're having a tailgate cheerleading party here on the Brad Sestmatt show this morning.
Put that hat on. It's professional.
Pathetic sports market we live in.
It is. And you've got to put perspective into this. Regardless of if you win, if you have home field advantage, you have Ryan Lindley as your quarterback right now. And if Drew Stanton miraculously recovers and plays in that first playoff game, he's still Drew Stanton. He's the guy that the offense couldn't get anything going with when he was playing. He's the guy that lost 19-3 to Seattle in Seattle when his defense had 7 sacks. This is, put it in perspective.
He's
this
the guy that
be...
led the team against that terrible performance against Atlanta, and they could have already had the division or the number one seed locked up if they won that game.
And the common theme is that both were road games. that's how important this week is, because Stanton is a much better home quarterback, as most quarterbacks are, than they are on the road.
And the team in general is much better. I mean, they almost lost to the Giants earlier in the season on the road, if not for a Ted Ginn punt return for a touchdown. That really helped.
I get this. In any sport, playing on the road's tougher than playing at home. There's no doubt in that. But you're still playing with either your second or quasi four-string quarterback going into it. I don't care how good your crowd is. They're not going to make up for that deficiency.
And you're going to be playing much better teams in the playoffs.
Yes, so. You're going to be playing the elite of the elite. You're potentially playing an Aaron Rodgers in your building. I don't care. This is the playoffs, and this is not the biggest regular season game in Cardinals history. And the cheerleading, I get it. This is the very – I want to make this point before we go to break. This is one of the most Arizona sports fan moments possible. You get overhyped for something that's likely not to happen, and then you get kicked in the groin. Put your cup on Sunday. Put your cup on for the playoff run, because this is what we have become accustomed to.
Oh, whatever. There's a laser show at halftime.
Lasers.
All right,
shut up. Unless they can blind some of the Seahawks with those lasers at halftime, you're not going to have a great opportunity here. You're setting yourself up for the kind of crushing defeat that we define ourselves as sports fans by here in Arizona.
And the hospitals, Espo, will be overrun on Monday with people jumping off the bandwagon with broken legs after the Cardinals lose 28-3. Yeah. You watch.
And hurt groins for not wearing a cup, I guess, apparently.
I mean, that's what we basically, as Arizona sports fans, have conditioned ourselves to do.
Yeah, I mean, look.
Overpump yourself.
The Wildcats in the Pac-12 championship game just a couple of weeks ago. Wow, Wildcat football fever as high as I've ever seen it, and I followed that program my entire life, and it was about over about 3-4 minutes into the game. And then you also look at the ASU against Stanford Pac-12 championship game a year ago, and that game was over in the first couple minutes as well. So you're definitely onto something. There is an aspect of the ultimate build-up for the ultimate letdown. If you keep yourself even keel, maybe it hurts less in the end, or maybe they actually exceed expectations in the end. So I'm with you on that one.
Not going to happen. Unless Carson Palmer makes the limited return to practice and makes some miraculous comeback.
Carson Palmer limited.
Don't believe it. Or let me say that the ultimate on Sunday is if Kurt Warner runs out that tunnel. Whether he plays or not, that's the one thing that could get you over the top and get that crowd to be a real factor.
I'd rather see Willie Beeman. Personally.
Now you're living on a dream right there. Yeah. You're living on a prayer. With most of these quarterbacks.
On that note, as I say drinks, we'll take a break. And coming up next, Jimmy Vaccaro, the wisest of the wise guys, Las Vegas bookmaker. He's going to join us next. Talk about Cardinals Seahawks. The Bulls are coming up in NBA. It's almost Christmas, which means it's prime NBA season. That's coming up as well. We'll talk to Jimmy about all that and more. It's Jared Cohen and Greg Esposito filling in for Brad on the Brad Sessmatch Show today.
And that is to have sharks with freaking laser beams attached to their heads. Now, evidently, my
Jared Cohen and Greg Esposito filling in for Brad Sessmatch on a Friday edition of the Brad Sessmatch Show. Huge weekend upcoming. We've got the Arizona Cardinals and the Seattle Seahawks. We've also got some bowl games getting started, and it's great this segment to be joined by the South Point Casino Resort odds maker, Las Vegas bookmaker, Jimmy Vaccaro, joins us each and every week on the Brad Sessmatch Show. Jimmy, Greg, and Jared, how are you doing today?
Fine, thank you. I hear Brad's in Disneyland, but just tell Brad that I'm in Disneyland every day in this town.
Yeah, you sure are. I didn't know he was at Disneyland. That's why we're doing the show today, because he's in Disneyland. That's nice.
Well, that's what I heard. Maybe that's a leak that shouldn't be put out there. We'll see what happens.
Breaking news from Jimmy Vaccaro on the Brad Sessmatch Show. Jimmy, as mentioned, the Cardinals, huge game this weekend against Seattle. Coming in, 9-point dogs, I think, is the latest I saw. I was just curious your thoughts on the movement of this game and why you think the spread is where it is so far.
Well, it's very apparent this will be probably one of the bigger games of the weekend. You're in a great time slot. You're in the late Sunday night game, which is good for us. Anytime there's great marquee games that are last games of the day, it just simply means that people just stick around longer and they just simply love to keep betting on the next thing. And they like to bet, especially when stakes are this high. I don't know what to tell you about the point spread, except it's the right point spread. Now, you can take it any way you want to, all your people in Arizona. We know that, the guy on the sidelines is doing a magnificent job. If he doesn't get Coach of the Year, then they don't know what they're voting for. You guys have been doing it in a lot of different ways. Nashville lost Palmer. Naturally, Stanton went down. Now you're down to the third-string quarterback. It's very apparent that Larry Fitzgerald's having what you would consider a great year with the injuries that he has, but you still wind up winning games 11-3. Ask some friends that are as nutty as I am about this stuff, and we can't remember the last time an 11-3 team was an 8.5-point underdog at home. Now, naturally, you're playing what we consider now probably the second-best team as far as power ratings are concerned, the Seattle Seahawks, and they've been coming on. It's a legitimate 8.5-point favorite. I would suggest, though, that there'll be money shown on Arizona because you guys have been gold for the people here in Nevada for the 14 games so far. It's probably been about 11 times that we needed you guys to win or cover the game to make a good game for us because there's still a lot of doubters out there. And you can see right now, the number's 8.5. Should it be there? I'll know in about 72 hours. But I would consider that there'll be some late money on Arizona only because you're a good home field guy. You play tenacious defense. And Seattle is not a high-scoring team. This is one of the lower totals of the day, being at 37. So when you're taking an underdog over a touchdown and the total's 37, you're usually staring at a 2017 final, so that's as much as I can tell you, buddy. We'll see what happens when the game's over.
Do you see much going towards the under on this, since the Cardinals are playing with the third-string quarterback, and the last time these two teams matched up, it was a 22-point combined game, 19-3?
Yeah, both teams are obviously aren't what you would call the flash guys. There's no doubt that the winner will probably be in the low 20s. So when you're talking about that scenario, you're naturally looking at a total that is low. Now, last night's total was a total that was bet down 4 points for the obvious reason. Neither the Titans or the Jaguars could score if they were still playing. And we're seeing some little lower totals in the last few weeks. They just seem to be running the ball more. Naturally, it won't affect you, but the weather has dragged some of these totals down 2 or 3 points. But yet, the scenario here is very simple. Seattle, obviously, it's a very, very good defensive team also. Going against a third-string quarterback, they're going to make it hard for them. On the other side of the coin is your defense is as stalwart as anybody I've seen this entire year. And Russell Wilson and that team, they just simply hate to use these terms because you hear them so much, but they just manage the game to win. They naturally don't like the turnovers. They love to eat clock. And you guys have to do the same thing, I think, to keep the game in contention, not being one and done when you're out there. You're going to need more than some three and outs here and there. You got to control the ball. But like I said, totals low, should be low, and we'll see what happens from there.
Jimmy Vaccaro, the wisest of the wise guys, on the Brad Sesmatch Show for his weekly segment. Jimmy, I'm curious. This isn't the only big game in the NFL this weekend. Mm-hmm. You look at the Broncos going up against the Colts. You got the Cowboys going up against the Colts. Broncos have a big game as well. You're just curious some of the other games and what they're looking like and what the action's going to be like on those teams as well. It's almost like a playoff weekend, right?
Yeah, and I've been saying it for a number of years only because I've been out here a number of years, but when you get into the last 2 weeks of the season, sometimes we just run into situations where really the games don't mean anything because either you've clinched the division, you've clinched the home field, and the handle goes down because people don't like to show up when the games don't mean anything. But the way it is right now, even though there's teams that have clinched their division, everybody's still fighting for position, everybody's still fighting maybe to get into the playoffs, everybody's still fighting for home field advantage, so the interest is there. I've never seen as much interest with one more week to go than I have this week, and barring something crazy, there'll be a lot of interest next week. And you can start top to bottom. There's only a few games that really don't mean anything. Colts and the Cowboys. Now, we know the Colts win the division, but the Cowboys are literally fighting for their playoff life, even though they beat Philadelphia last week. They're a 3-point favorite. Early money's been on the Cowboys. There's a few 3.5s around, but that's just on the theory of, first of all, the Cowboys are playing better than a lot of people have thought. No doubt that Andrew Luck is one of these young kids who's going to be around for a long time. They should be a 3-point dog. Now, now if you're looking for the psyche side of it, the game means 10 times more to the Cowboys as opposed to the Colts, because the Colts are getting in no matter what, no matter where they play. Dallas, things have to simply fall right. They must win to see what happens, so that makes it a big game there. With the Packers losing last week to the lowly Buffalo Bills, Still, they must keep winning also. You know, they could not make the playoffs. They're playing a team that they should be with Tampa Bay, but when you run into these similar situations where Tampa Bay would just love nothing more than to knock the Packers out, you know, these games mean something too. The Packers naturally should be a 10-point favorite. They are, but there hasn't been like crazy money on the Packers because it's not one of the best spots for the Packers. And okay, Lions-Bears, what do you do? Cutler's on the bench. Jimmy Clausen's coming off the bench. Now that game opened 6.5 when the word spread that they were benching Cutler. The game we adjusted to 7.5, but there was immediate money on Detroit even after that. The game got as high as 9, but there are a lot of people who I know and I respect would think would rather take 9 points with Clausen as opposed to 6.5 with Cutler back here. He surely hasn't done that much. So an interesting, entertaining game. Naturally, you can just go Chiefs and the Steelers. Once again, everybody's fighting for something here. Steelers, 3-point favorite. I suggest we would get money on the Steelers at the -3. This game is definitely going to go up a little bit. But like I said, I could go up and down the sheet here, and everything just about means something, which is good for us.
One last one for you, Jimmy. Since the injury to Stanton, what have happened to the Cardinals' Super Bowl odds? How have those adjusted?
You're still probably one of the higher ones to win it, only because it's going to be tough. You know, listen, I know you guys are from there, but first of all, you better secure home field advantage. That's going to be the first big thing. It's still going to be hard in a lot of eyes of what we consider the power ratings that you guys, you know, winning 3 games with a third-string quarterback. But I've seen crazier things happen. Right now, I think at the South Bank, we still have them, I believe it, about 18-1 to win it all. Now, that shows sometimes maybe no respect for an 11-3 team, but it just shows you there's a lot of other teams gathering a lot of money early on, which put the Cardinals where they were. But I can't tell you this. I wouldn't mind seeing Arizona get to the Super Bowl. You're close to Las Vegas. It helps when these games are closer to Las Vegas. And we would win a lot in the future books, so I'm rooting for you guys.
Really quick, Jimmy, before we let you go, you mentioned it really briefly, the fact that a team that's 11-3 has won 14 of the last 15 at home is still 8.5-point dog at home. You alluded it quickly. It's something that you guys really haven't seen much with that type of resume being the case.
No, I really haven't. And I'm sure one of the stat guys will pop up on the radio in the next day or two, especially the Las Vegas guys who delve into the stats much more than I do. I'll hear of the last time an 11-3 team was over a touchdown underdog at home. And if I do, I'll give you guys a call.
I appreciate that. Jimmy Vaccaro joins us every week. Thank you so much for your time. We look forward to talking to you next week.
All right, pal.
All right, it's Jimmy Vaccaro joining Jared Cohen and Greg Esposito here on the Brout Sesmat Show. South Point Casino Resort oddsmaker, as mentioned, joins us each and every week. Very interesting stuff to say about this Cardinal game from another perspective. Coming up next, we'll switch gears a little bit. We'll be joined by Bill Gutekunst, the AZ Central chief film and media critic. Very interesting stuff to talk about with him in terms of things going on in our world outside of the world of sports. Very curious and looking forward to this conversation. He's next, Greg Esposito, Jared Cohen on the Brad Sesmat Show on AZ Central Sports and Sports360AZ.com. And it's that time every week on the Brad Sesmat Show where we get curtains. Wow. Jared Nielsen, I like that. If you're watching on the stream, we get curtains to open up the segment that we have each and every week with Bill Gutekunst, AZ Central chief film media critic. And Bill, it's great to have you, Jared Cohen and Greg Esposito. It's been one of the most bizarre, kind of scary weeks in that world that I can remember when you look at everything that's happening around the movie, the interview, and Sony Picture Entertainment, and all of the things around that. For people that don't really know what's going on and how the chips have fallen with this whole situation, can you bring everyone up to speed on how this has all transpired to why the interview will not be in movie theaters on Christmas Day?
Or anywhere else.
It
was a bizarre story, and it's one of those ones where, like, when you're in the middle of it, you're doing it so much that you can't, it kind of catches up with it, you know? I mean, like, you don't realize what's going on at the end. You look back, it's like, wow, that was weird.
Yeah, 100%.
It totally reminded me of when I was like, when I used to work in sports, and I used to call Colangelo all the time for stuff. And he, among all owners, he would always call you back himself. Always, you know, one day he didn't call back. I was like, well, I wonder what that's about. And then, you know, an hour later they said, oh, we just traded for Charles Barkley. Like, oh, that's awesome. Yeah. You know, it was bizarre then that same way. But what happened here is a Seth Rogen and James Franco are starring in this movie called The Interview, where they play the host and producer of this sort of stupid TV show. The leader of North Korea likes the show. He invites him over to do an interview with him. And the U.S. government says, by the way, while you're there, could you kill him? This obviously was not making North Korea very happy, but what happened in the background is North Korea, that we now know, hacked into Sony's emails and stuff and got all their accounts, they've been publishing all these embarrassing emails, bad business deals, all, you know, just really catty, gossipy things. They've been putting that out. And then they said, if any theater shows this, be prepared for like a 9/11 type situation, or don't forget 9/11. And if you live near a theater, don't be home that day, or something like that.
Jeez.
The movie's supposed to open on Christmas. Now, what happened first was more than half of the theaters and chains in the U.S. said, sorry, we're not going to play it. When that happened, Sony said, well, we're pulling the plug. We are not going to have this thing, and we're not going to do it online anywhere else, because me and a lot of other people wrote, you know, hey, just make it available for, you know, video on demand. Charge for it, that's fair. But make it so that everybody can see this thing, and we, you know, you kind of beat them at their own game, and we're still safe. They're not doing that, evidently, for insurance reasons. If they get a total, if the movie doesn't show anywhere, they get all their insurance money back. If they show it in some places, they only get a partial amount. So,
what is the slippery slope with this situation like this, and what's your overall opinion? You mentioned it should still be given the opportunity to stream, but there's people out there saying, oh, well, the terrorists are winning if you don't show that in the theaters, or are you of the opinion that they did the right thing? It's just such a bizarre situation. I don't even know what the appropriate question is to ask, but just your overall thoughts when you saw this transpiring and what the slippery slope for this can be going forward with movies.
I think it's horrible, and I think it is a slippery slope. And, you know, a friend of mine, James Poniewozik, he's the TV critic for Time magazine, he wrote that this may well be the first real cultural war, and we lost.
Wow.
We lost this battle. What happens now is, what if another fringe group makes an anonymous threat? We're going to blow up all the theaters that show The Hobbit. You know, we are the group of demon elves or something like that. You know, we're going to blow up a theater. Are they going to cave? Are they not going to show The Hobbit then? I mean, and you think, you know, and sometimes a fringe group or like a really ultra conservative group will complain about a movie, but they'll just try to boycott it or something. They won't say don't show it. They'll just say don't go to it. That what's dangerous here is, I mean, they shouldn't get to decide, but we should get to decide what we want to see. I mean, if you don't want to go see an R-rated movie, you know what? They got the rating right there. And they, you know, you'd make that decision yourself. But I don't want somebody else making it for me.
Sure.
And I just think that it's just dangerous. I mean, they should not be dictating what we do. And you may sound absurd. You may think, oh, well, that wouldn't really happen. No fringe group would really do that, or they wouldn't, you know, if they did, they wouldn't listen. It sounds absurd, maybe. But 3 days ago, this sounded absurd. And here we are.
Well, if you'd give me a list of celebrities, Seth Rogen wouldn't have been on my top to cause an international incident, first off.
At least not like this.
No, I mean, you know, not at all. Definitely not like
you know, mooning the president or something. You know?
Yeah,
exactly. But part of me wonders, how much of this has to do with Sony being embarrassed by all the things being leaked out? Did that play a part in them deciding to pull the plug on this and not actually show it as much as the threats potentially? Because it really seems like Sony is extremely embarrassed by everything that got out. There was every internal email you could think of and pretty damning stuff about the company.
Well, when you start making racially insensitive remarks about the president of the United States and what movies he might like, you are probably doing the wrong thing. I just think it maybe that played a part in it, but I think that more than that, it was this threat. I mean, they're embarrassed, but if they could, you know, they needed something to take people's mind off of that, and maybe this movie would have been that, although it's supposedly not very good. I don't know. I just think that it's a mess, and it's And there's no good way out now. I mean, what do you do? I mean, what? You know, I just saw somebody posted something that says, you know, I hope Kim Jong-un does not dislike Star Wars.
And before we switch gears, I just one other thing, because I'm trying to relay things that I've heard from people, you know, via social media or talking with them on the phone or in person about this topic, saying like, well, what if North Korea put out a movie where the president was being assassinated, the U.S. president was being assassinated by North Koreans? And my initial response was, well, U.S. already puts out stuff where the president, I mean, if you watch 24, that's happened like five times on the history of 24. So I'm curious your thoughts if that aspect of it is something that will now be toned back on the killing of high-ranking officials, whether they're in the U.S. or outside of the country in movies and things like that. Is that something that now people in the movie industry are maybe going to, you know, hold back on or be more aggressive about? I know it's not anything that you can answer, but is it something that you feel could lead in that direction?
Yeah, sure, it could. I hope that it doesn't, and not because I enjoy movies where they kill the president or anything like that, but I do enjoy freedom of speech, and your jobs and my jobs, and, you know, they kind of depend on that. I just think that's just a dangerous precedent. That's why we have a rating system. That's why you have the choice of whether to go see something or not. There are movies, I see every movie just about, right? Mm-hmm. And some of these things are genuinely offensive. I mean, you know, you got to warn people. It's like, look, that R rating, man, that's no joke. This, you know, they really mean it. But that doesn't mean you shouldn't go see it if you like that kind of thing. I mean, you get to make the choice. They don't get to make it for you. And the guy that's making the movie, he makes the movie he makes. Now, of course, there are limits. There are things you can't show. I mean, you know, there's still. But they shouldn't be able to dictate content. Now, they do all the time. I mean, studios give notes to directors, but it typically is more like, you know, more Clooney in this scene, you know, or, you know, like, you know, play him up more, you know, that kind of thing. It's not typically, you know, oh, you can't kill the president. Because at that point, they've already seen the script, you know? I mean,
it's very true.
Let's shift gears and talk about a master of freedom of speech, one Stephen Colbert, who did it exquisitely for 9 years, and kind of him wrapping up the show last night, the Colbert Report, and looking ahead to him taking over The Late Show. What are your thoughts, and do you think he'll be able to make that transition from what was basically a character, a guy that didn't really fit Stephen's actual personality, to being himself on The Late Show?
I think he can do anything, because I really do. Because I was one of the nitwits. I was a TV critic when the Colbert Report came on. And I loved him. I loved his character. But I was one of these idiots that was saying, there is no way in 6 months he's going to exhaust everything there is to say, that there is to do with this. You know, how long can this go on? Of course, I was way wrong. the guy's a genius. I mean, he's brilliant. And he, you know, he found ways to keep that thing alive. And you got to also say, the idiotic behavior of the U.S. government helps a lot. You know, no matter who's in power. I mean, that's just, John Stewart will never run out of material. But I think he's a good choice to do this. But it's going to be interesting to see what he does when he's doing like a real interview. He does interviews on every one of his shows. But to see him be Colbert, and I would say this too, I think it's going to be different than Letterman, and it should be, because I believe, and I've written this before, I think Letterman's the best late night host ever, better than Johnny Carson, better than anybody. And I know that if I was older, I may not say that about Johnny Carson, but here's how Letterman changed the way the thing is done. And there are very few people in any medium that change the way the thing is done. Michael Jordan changed the wardrobe in the NBA. People wear long shorts, you know, so he certainly did other things too. But he did make a cultural change. The Beatles made everybody have long hair, you know, but also, you know, play rock music. But I think what Letterman did was, you know, I was in college when it came out, and who stays up now to watch anything like that? You know what I mean? It was like this cultural event. And it seemed almost like a parody of a talk show, but it's like, oh, no, actually it is a talk show. He's just doing it his way. So it's going to be different, but I can't wait to see what he does with it.
Bill Goodykoontz joins us, AZ Central chief film and media critic. One last one for you. It's been the debate of our show today. Is this Cardinals-Seahawks game the biggest game in the history, regular season game in the history of the Cardinals since they've been in Arizona?
It is not, and I do not understand why people keep saying it is. Because.
You're getting a standing ovation from me.
This is why. They're in the playoffs. Win or lose, they're in the playoffs. The biggest regular season game in the history was, in their history, I think, was back in whenever it was, 98 or whatever, when they had to beat San Diego.
Another standing ovation over here from Greg.
Bill, you're a genius. I'm just going to say that to you.
No, but I think obviously it's a big game. But it doesn't, and it has to do with seeding. And if they, you know, if they got to go on the road, they're probably not going to win. But who's taking sides here? What are the sides? Give me the counter argument.
The counter argument.
Jared, make
no,
your counter.
No, first of all, I want to put it out there that I agree with both of you. The counter argument is, though, that this team is substantially better at home than they are on the road. They've won, I've said 20 times, they've won 14 of the last 15 home games. It's day and night the way this team plays at home versus on the road. And you have an opportunity to have a clear path to a home Super Bowl playing two home games. I mean, it's not easy to win playoff games, but it's a much better situation for them. If they win this game, they lock up the home field advantage throughout the playoffs leading up to a home Super Bowl. It just could be the best route to the Cardinals winning a Super Bowl quite possibly ever. You know, we don't know if this is going to ever happen again and things could work into their favor again in this capacity. I say that agreeing with you guys, but that is the counter argument.
The problem with that argument is too much of it is speculative. I mean, you don't know. Maybe they can win a game on it. Hey, they
proved it in 98, the team that you're talking about.
And last year they won in Seattle when nobody else was. And they weren't as good as they are now. I mean, it kind of remains to be seen. We'll see how. I have Michael Floyd on my fantasy team, and I quickly moved him down to the bench. You never know. Sometimes, like, a new quarterback will find one guy and kind of lock in on him, throw him, like, 20 walls. Maybe he'll do that.
And maybe that'll be, after all this time, the first career touchdown pass for Ryan Lindley. So who knows? Bill, thank you so much for your time. As always, we appreciate it. Great insight. Loved hearing about your insight about the interview, and we look forward to hearing from you next week.
Thank you, guys. Have fun.
Thank you. Bill Gutekunst joins us here every week on the Brad Sesmat Show, AZ Central chief film and media critic. Good stuff from Bill. That was really interesting stuff. Hearing that whole perspective coming from him, I got the chills, to be honest.
He was the second smartest man that was on the show today behind me. So congratulations, Dan.
I'm glad I'm along for the ride. I'm glad I'm along for the ride.
Thanks for driving.
It's been great. Good stuff. That's Greg Esposito, Jared Cohen filling in for Brad Sesmat on the Brad Sesmat Show today. Great stuff, joined by Jimmy Vaccaro and Bill Gutekunst. Cardinals and Seahawks, the biggest game in the history of games on Sunday, and they have laser beams. Hour number two on the Brad Sesmat Show, a Friday edition of the Brad Sesmat Show. I'm Jared Cohen. That's Greg Esposito. We're filling in for the big guy today on Sports360AZ.com and AZ Central Sports. Going to be joined this hour by Bill Gutekunst, AZ Central film and media critic. Also before him, Jimmy Vaccaro, Las Vegas bookmaker, South Point Casino Resort odds maker. Great stuff from both of them coming up. Talking about the spread of this Cardinal game being 8.5, despite the fact the Cardinals are 11-3 on the season and have a chance to lock up home field advantage. And then talking about everything going around the movie, The Interview, which was supposed to come out on Christmas, which will no longer be. We'll get into all that with Bill coming up at the end of the hour. But for now, the top stories this hour are brought to you by Phoenix Mesa Gateway Airport. Gateway can get you directly to Eugene, Oregon, Provo, Utah, and many other college football destinations. Gateway Airport, where it is just plain easy. Greg Esposito, I bring you on as we talk Arizona Cardinals, first and foremost, the top stories of this hour, and it's the biggest game in the history of the planet. If you're anything of a fan, and Michael Bidwell has brought in sharks with freaking laser beams attached to their heads for the halftime show. That's how big this freaking game is.
If I hear one more person talk about how big this game, it's another game. Yes, there's things on the line, but this is not the biggest anything other than the biggest overhyped mess that we've heard in the valley in a very long time.
But there's sharks with freaking laser beams.
I don't. You could. You could bring in laser beams to destroy the Death Star in the middle of this thing, and it's not going to be the biggest anything we've seen.
Let's take a moment. Jared Espo is now channeling his inner Chris Jackie. So stand by for that.
Chris and Chris Jackie has got lasers in his veins.
Oh, come on. That the 97 game to put this team into the playoffs for the first time in forever and the first time since moving to Phoenix.
Was that 1897?
It felt like it. 1997.
God, it feels like forever ago.
It does feel like it. It's 18 years ago almost. But look at that game and the hysteria and the aftermath of that, of tearing down the goalpost, taking them down Mill Avenue. That was the biggest home regular season game in Cardinals history. Now, this one isn't. This one's setting you up for disappointment. We've talked about this. This is the typical Arizona sports fan moment where you're going to get overhyped, you're going to get overexcited, and you're going to get kicked in the nether regions, all right? I got a hashtag for you. Next fan cup up, all right? Put your cup on. Because this is going to
instead of next man up, next man cup.
put it on because you're likely to take one in the groin this weekend, all right? Because that's how this works for us. We have a history of it. I'm going to use a dated reference, but you know how thick a phone book is? Half of you probably don't. But that's how thick the history of disappointment in Arizona sports is. And this is going to be another page in it. Whether it's this weekend or it's in the playoffs, you can't get overhyped when Ryan Lindley is your best answer at quarterback right now and your potential quote-unquote savior is Drew Stanton, who couldn't get anything going in the regular season. This was a great season, but this is the first time in the history of the NFL that a team could finish with 12 wins and their fan base could be completely demoralized going into the playoffs, or should be if they're thinking logically, because you have no real chance with a third string quarterback likely in Ryan Lindley starting, or a second string that couldn't do anything offensively starting for you in a playoff game. I don't care if you have home field or you're playing on the road. That's not a recipe for success.
Some people listening, Espo, might call you a realist, and others might call you a doubter. And this is what Peter King had to say of Bruce Arians saying the Cardinals are fueled by people such as yourself.
They really believe in Bruce Arians. And they really believe in the messages that he is going to give them. And to me, I think you can't underestimate how he leads them and the kind of stuff that he says to them. There's no question that he's going to bring this up this week.
You can call me a doubter. You can call me a hater. You can call me whatever you want. But I'm still one of the very few that remember there was a time where Cardinals home games weren't on television because none of you actually showed up to them.
I remember
here in the Valley.
Very, very, very well.
Well, we couldn't afford tickets, but we would gather around my dad's radio and we would listen to every broadcast.
Like in the 1940s where people would gather around the
radio. We would gather around the radio for 3 hours. And listen to Cardinals game on whatever station they had been transient and moved to that year because nobody wanted this team back then. You can call me a doubter, you can call me a hater, but I've been here for the long haul. I'm a true Cardinals fan.
Right there with you,
I just
buddy.
Understand the truth about everything in this.
So getting into this game, period, and not looking past this game, not looking the ramifications of a win or a loss, just looking at this game. You alluded to it. Ryan Lindley is your quarterback. He has set a record for the most consecutive completions or games or whatever it is without a touchdown pass, which is a very sad stat to be the longest of anything. But Jake Plummer joined Brad Sesmatt's show yesterday, as he does each and every week, and talked about some advice that he has for Mr. Lindley going into this big game.
God, just go out and play ball and don't worry about it. You know. You're in the league for a reason, and trust in the guys around you. Anticipate them getting open. Don't wait to see them open, but see the defense and see where they're at, and know that if Larry Fitzgerald's running a read route, he's going to get open. So don't wait. Trust your instincts and throw it where you think you're going to go, and have fun. God dang, what an awesome experience and an opportunity for this young man to go out and play well and lead this team, a really tough-nosed team that believes in each other.
He is in this league for a reason.
Of course.
But he was third string or on a practice squad for a reason as well. There's danger telling him to go out there and just play, be freewheeling. You know what? Right now, I'd rather have Jake Plummer, who hasn't been in the league forever, to actually start this game for the Cardinals than Ryan Lindley. Because if we're talking about just living off pure talent and what you can do, Jake at his age still has more than what Ryan Lindley has. There's a reason that Ken Whisenhunt abandoned ship on this guy, a guy who started Max frickin' Hall at quarterback, all right? A guy who started a plethora of quarterbacks. There were more quarterbacks in that last part of the Whisenhunt era than at the combine, all right? And he abandoned Ryan Lindley. There's reasons for this. Now, if you want to have Ryan Lindley try to be a game manager and not do anything to hurt you, then there's a chance in this game. But if you want him to just go out there and just, you know, live off of his instincts and try to make big, deep throws, you're going to be in big trouble in this one.
Leading up to this game, Brock Huer joined the show yesterday as well, in addition to Jake Plummer, another former quarterback, saying both teams have that certain swagger going into this matchup against one another.
Sure enjoyed Bruce Arians' comments yesterday, and we played it a bunch on our show
this morning.
And I think I think he provides more bulletin board material than any coach in the league, and I think it's wonderful.
Yeah.
And in many ways, honestly, Brad, who he is Earl Thomas and Richard Sherman and that Legion of Boom. That is exactly who your head coach is. And Pete is a lot of that. He just doesn't express it as openly as his players do in those ones I just referenced.
Sure.
And as much as Bruce Arians does. And when he says, listen, we sacked Russell 7 times the last time we played him a month ago, should have had 11. He's not exaggerating. I mean, that's a defensive line that has faced the starting pitcher a few times and feels great about it.
It's good stuff from Brock Huer yesterday.
Swagger's great, but backing it up with hardware and being the ones that own the hardware is better. That's what Seattle has, and they're not dealing with an injured quarterback or major injuries to that Legion of Boom. No, they've got an entire roster that helped them win a Super Bowl last year. You can have swagger when you have 11 wins and you're the number one seed as of right now, but Seattle has the reason to have that swagger. They proved that swagger, they were worthy of it. The Cardinals haven't. Now, you can take a step towards that in beating Seattle this weekend, but the ones with the real swagger and the proof behind it are the Seattle Seahawks.
That's Greg Esposito. I'm Jared Cohen. We're filling in for Brad Sesmat today. Switching gears, baseball trades. Now, wouldn't you know it? On the same day, Justin Upton is traded to the Padres. It just comes down that Martin Prado has been traded to the Marlins. On the same exact day, the two guys that were essentially traded for one another, some prospects were involved as well, but pretty much, what are the odds of that? Justin Upton traded to the Padres for a group of prospects, the sending going back to Atlanta. One of the prospects is former Gilbert High School standout Dustin Peterson. He's a third baseman, a good-looking player, very young player. That's one of the pieces there. Haven't seen all the details in the Martin Prado trade, but he's apparently headed to the Marlins along with Nathan Eovaldi, a starting pitcher, in return for some other players. But just find that very fascinating. Here's what Buster Olney had to say, though. Just a day after Matt Kemp, that trade officially goes from the Dodgers to the Padres. Justin Upton is headed to the Padres as well. And here's what Buster Olney had to say about what the Padres are doing in the outfield.
The Padres are following through on a vision that they identified early in this offseason after they hired A.J. Preller to be their general manager. When you talked with executives with other teams, they were telling you in late November, boy, the Padres are looking to make big moves. And they feel like that by adding a couple of exactly the right power-hitting bats, that they could contend in the National League West in 2015 because of the makeup of the rest of the team.
That's Buster Olney. And also should be mentioned that Will Myers, another former marquee prospect in the Tampa Bay Rays organization, ended up in a San Diego uniform as well amongst all this trading. But just fascinating how this has all transpired.
I love the Padres are give us your cast-offs from outfields other places in the NL West.
Scrambling,
like,
yeah.
I mean, we've seen these guys in the NL West, and I don't see big bats surviving in a cavernous stadium in San Diego. And honestly, if we're talking Upton trades, call me when La Russa gets Cade Upton, because that's the only way this is going to be interesting to me at all. Justin Upton has now been on three teams in 3 years, and he went from child prodigy to this now. He's a guy that basically is a cast-off, and now he's going to try to make it work in a ballpark that doesn't suit his style of play. Best of luck, Justin.
Yeah, there's no question about it. And then in NBA news, Rajon Rondo has been traded to the Dallas Mavericks in exchange for Brendan Wright, Jay Crowder, a couple draft picks upcoming. The Celtics are now loaded with draft picks, which, to be honest, the 2015 draft isn't as stacked as the 2014 one, so having now two picks in the 20s in the first round isn't as lucrative as it might have been last season. But now you look at an already stacked Dallas Mavericks team that looks to be in the top tier of the Western Conference. They had a point guard in Rajon Rondo. We talked about in the first hour. I think that this makes this team that much more dangerous with what he can do with distributing the ball within their offense. You seem to think that it doesn't change things too much. But what it definitely does is it takes another elite point guard out of the Eastern Conference and puts him smack dab right in the middle of the Western Conference.
Look, the Western Conference is the Pixar of basketball. Even when it's not with the teams that aren't that good, they're still entertaining. There's still that thing that any given night anybody in the West can win. Just like those Pixar films, even the bad ones weren't that bad.
Pixar has gotten me through having to watch movies with my 3-year-old, because if not for Toy Story, Up, some of those Pixar movies, I don't know what I'd do, because some of these movies are awful.
And that's what NBA writers are saying about the Western Conference. They get you through the fact that you have to watch some of those Eastern Conference games. It's the Western Conference. Any team on any night can be very entertaining. Even the Lakers, who are bad, have Kobe and Swaggy P, and there's an entertainment factor. The West is stacked. This doesn't shake up the West all that much. It just makes it that much stronger.
Do you recall... team 1 through 8 being this strong? Because normally 7 or 8, it's normally a given that the one
conference.
Well,
last year, I mean, the Western Conference in the NBA has been like this for almost 13 years now.
I just feel like it's as strong as ever after not just this trade, but just this season. You could look at, could be the 8 seed, and you could easily knock off a 1 seed, and that's not really always been the case. So
it makes for exciting basketball, that's for sure.
It sure is. That's Greg Esposito. I'm Jared Cohen, filling in for Brad Sesmat today. We talked a little Cardinals in this segment. We'll dive into it much, much more coming up next. Filling in for Brad Sesmat today on Sports360AZ.com and AZ Central Sports.